Good morning. Last Thursday, we have talking about Tatura and what happens if the popsicle stick is left over after kids eat the ice cream, and is the popsicle stick muktza, because it's no lab now, it's serving a different purpose. It's no longer holding up the ice cream, but rather it's now destined for an arts and crafts project. But whether we say that no, that the popsicle stick is not nolad. So it was brought to my attention that it's possible that when something retains its original form, when it doesn't get broken, but rather is in its original form, perhaps it can never be nolad. And so therefore this popsicle stick, which remains unchanged from the time that it was supporting the ice cream, perhaps even though its function has changed, but it shouldn't be classified as nolad because it retains its original form. Now, I think that's a very, very strong argument. Because of that, I revised my case. I would say that there's one minor reservation that I have about that argument, and that is, we say that the popsicle stick is something independent and separate from the ice cream, so that it's basically an ice cream on a popsicle stick, which is a combination, a composite, symbiosis of two different things, right? And therefore, when the ice cream gets eaten up, the popsicle stick remains as it was. Right? Or do we say that the ice cream and the popsicle stick fuse, right, into a single entity, and therefore it is a ice cream on a popsicle stick with hyphens in between all of those words, right? In which case, when the ice cream is gone, the popsicle stick now is diminished from what it formerly was, and perhaps might be considered shivrei kelim. That's a minor reservation that I have. I know Post can discuss whether a mezuzah is considered to be a kli, or whether it's not considered to be a kli. On the one hand, mezuzahs are attached to the wall. Anything which is attached to a building is not considered to be a kli. But on the other hand, perhaps a mezuzah is so chashuv in and of itself that even when it's put up on a wall, it will not be batel to the building, and is considered to be something independent and on its own. Obviously, not kamina. If it is a kli, you can move it on Shabbos. If it's not a kli, you would have to move it by minat sad, or doing tiltol, the gufo with your elbows or something like that. So I think that there is a similar shaila, perhaps, that you could raise about the popsicle. Maybe it does fuse with the ice cream, in which case, when the ice cream is gone, it will be considered to be something different, changed, broken almost, if you will. But I accept the critique, so I've revised my case. Now we'll talk about the following case. Let's say that, again, very, very similar, it's Yontif, and you're walking along, and unbeknownst to you, there's a nail sticking out of a wall, right, or of a table or something like that, and your shirt gets caught on the nail, and it gets ripped. So of course, when you come home, so you want to change out your shirt, and so you do, you get into a nice new Yontif shirt, and then there's a big spill. So, say instead of using up the entire stash of pre-cut paper towels, right, maybe we can just take the shirt, which anyhow is destined for the garbage, and we'll use that to mop up the spill. Right, so that's a case.
He wasn't prepared, Ben Ashmashos.
So that's a case of pure nolad. Right. The shirt during Ben Ashmashos was destined, right, for being worn and for giving a person, warmth and dignity and whatever else the shirt is meant for. And now this shirt is useless for those purposes. It's torn, but it still is useful as a rag, to map things up and to absorb things. And so that's another question, right? It's not suitable for its original purpose, right? But it is suitable for some other purpose, and that's exactly, again, the case which the Chachamim in the Mishnah debated with Reb Yehuda. According to the Chachamim, as long as it still is suitable for some purpose, it is mutter, as opposed to Reb Yehuda, who says that it must still be suitable for its original purpose. And again, we left off with the machlokes between the Magen Avraham and the Taz, that how to explain the Chachamim's lenient position.
So you say you can wash and use it in Ashrodah?
Yes, if it's sewn up.
It's sewn up.
Yeah, the next scenario, which is not on this page, is also going to be about shirts. We'll get there. So So the question is, like, why are the Chachamim lenient? Why do they say that this shirt, right, is allowed to be carried and moved on Shabbos? So according to the Taz, the reason that it's allowed to be carried is because the shirt is not nolad at all. That it was originally suitable for something, for some use, and now it's still suitable for some use. It had utility before, it has utility now, and the fact that exactly what it's meant for has changed, it's so minor that it's not considered to have undergone a change at all. The way I said it Thursday is everything is a widget, everything is a multi-purpose gadget, and just because its main purpose right now is to afford me with dignity and warmth doesn't mean that that it doesn't have other purposes, and so it retains its original function. It's not nolad at all. That's the opinion of the Taz. The Magen Avraham though argues. The Magen Avraham says that this really is a little bit nolad, because you have to concede that a shirt has a purpose. It's meant for dignity and warmth. It's not meant for mopping up spills. Right. The same way that everything else has a purpose. Right, a pen. Right, a pen is meant for writing. It's not meant for pointing. If it runs out of ink, right, on Yontif, for whatever reason, a guy is using it and it ran out of ink. So then, conceivably, it would be nolad, even though right, it still is suitable for some other purpose. But that isn't the main purpose that it was meant for, and so that would be considered a half nolad case. And again, the nafkamina is, even though on Shabbos we paskin, right, that half nolad may be moved, but on Yontif, there's going to be that nafkamina. So the Taz would say that this shirt, since it's not nolad at all, it still has some utility, so it's not nolad at all, and therefore you're allowed to use it on Yontif for mapping up the spill. The Magen Avraham, who says that it's a half nolad, which is mutter on Shabbos, but also on Yontif, he would say that you cannot use this shirt on Yontif for mapping up the spill, that the shirt is mukta, and you have to move it only, with tiltel min atzad or tiltel begufo.
So it's not the Magen Avraham agrees with Rabbi Yehuda. It's
no.
Just that he adds like a separate distinction, like another category. Yeah.
Right. Rabbi Yehuda would say it's nolad gamur,
yeah,
which is also even on Shabbos. And the Chachamim say it's half nolad, which is mutter.
According to the Magen Avraham. And the Taz,
yes,
doesn't have this concept of
the Taz says that according to Rabbi Yehuda, it's nolad gamur. According to the Chachamim, it's not nolad at all.
At all. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, just parenthetically, I, tiltel begufo, right? Moving something with your body. So we actually had this on Shabbos, that a package of yeast fell out of the refrigerator. And anything that's left on the floor ends up getting spread out over the entire floor. So my wife said, "Is there anything that we can do to pick up a package of yeast?" I said, "Yeah, you can pick it up with your feet." So try picking up a package of yeast with your feet and putting it in the fridge. What we actually did was that I put my foot on one side of it, she put her foot on the other side, and it was like, put it into the, exactly, and yeah, so that's the proper way for putting a package of yeast back in the fridge on Shabbos.
Let me tell you something, that would be
unusual.
Teamwork, it takes real teamwork. Kicking something, as long as it's not more than normal to kick it. Yeah. So that was parenthetical. So let's take a look at the origins of this debate between the Taz and the Magen Avraham, as they appear in the Gemara. So we're on Kuf Chaf Dalet Amud Beis, right after the Mishnah. The Gemara is going to give three different interpretations of the Mishnah. The first interpretation we're going to reject, and the second two interpretations we're going to accept. And so we're going to go very, very quickly through the rejected explanation, and then we'll slow down when we get up to the two explanations that we accept. So here's the rejected explanation. Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel. Rav Yehuda says, Machlokes shenishperu me'erev Shabbos. The only time the Rav Yehuda and the Chachamim argue is when it breaks. I think I have extra ones someplace. Is when Kuf Chaf Dalet.
No.
Oh, we're on page 11.
Oh, okay.
Right, again, it's question 121. When Kalin break,
yes.
Sometimes everyone agrees you can move their fragments, and sometimes it's a dispute. And in what case does everyone agree? Again, that's the Mishnah. It's a case when it's still suitable to do its original work. Like Mr. Cohen pointed out this morning, if the lid of a garbage pail breaks off, right, and you can still use it to cover the garbage and prevent, you know, the bad smell from coming out of the garbage. So that's me'osem me'ein melachto harishona. It's still suitable for its original function, as long as there's no gzeira shema yitkai and concern, right, that you might, lack it in and be over on makab apakish, the araisa drabanan. So then you'll be allowed to move that garbage pail cover because it's osem me'ein melachto. But in the case of the shirt, right, once it's got that big gash in it, it's no longer suitable for its original function, and that's the case which is a dispute. It's still suitable for something, right, but not suitable for its original function. So 123, we need to wait until we get to the two explanations that the Gemara accepts, and to get there, we need to read the rejected explanation. So again, Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, Machlokes, Shenishpiru Me'erev Shabbos. It's only a Machlokes if this, the cover, right, or the cup. There's a cup. Right, a teacup that broke on Erev Shabbos. In the olden days, you would use shards of pottery or of china. You would use them to cover other things, like sort of like a cork of some sort. And that's why it's still doing some sort of halacha. That machlokas is only when it's broken on Erev Shabbos. Demar savar me'ein melachton in me'ein melacha acheres lo. According to Reb Yehuda, it's only going to escape from being muktzah. It's only going to be mutter betiltol if it's doing its original function, but some other function would not make it mutter betiltol. Umar sover, and the chachamim hold afilu me'ein melacha acheres, even if it's doing some other function, it's still his mutter is allowed to be moved. Aval, says Rabbi Yehuda, nishvuru b'shabbos, if this cup broke on Shabbos, divrei hakol mutarin, everybody agrees that you're allowed to move it around. This harks back to the Chayei Adam that we started off with weeks and weeks ago. Hoel u'muchanin et agabe avien mutar. Since during Bein Hashmashos, this was part of a kli, and since you prepared properly before Shabbos began, you put all the plans into place, therefore, the purpose of muktzah is served. The purpose of muktzah is to ensure that the weekdays are the time for preparation. Shabbos is a time for implementing the plan. As long as everything was properly planned out during the week, so whatever happens on Shabbos is not going to change the muktzah status. It's muchan agav aviv. During Bein Hashmashos, this was part of a kli and was mutar b'tiltol, and therefore the entire Shabbos, even after it breaks, it remains muchan agav aviv, and you're allowed to move it around. This is the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel. However, we're going to reject this based on a braisa. Mosiv Rabbi Zutroi challenged this. There's a Mishnah in Maseches Beya which says masikin b'kelim ve'in masikin b'shivrei kelim. That let's say that you have an old wood-burning fireplace, or you're living a couple of hundred years ago, and the only source of heat is burning things. So the halacha is that let's say that your fire is going low and you want to refuel and refresh that fire. So you're allowed to toss intact kelim into the fire. In other words, you can take your wooden spoons and your wooden bowls and throw them into the fire as fuel for the fire. However, you're not allowed to use anyantif. You're not allowed to use shivri kelim. So if you have a broken wooden spoon, so that you're not allowed to move in order to feed the fire. And it's a very perplexing Mishnah, right? You would have thought that broken kelim are more suitable as fuel for the fire than intact kelim, right? But the logic is going to be, right, something about nola, that in an intact kli, right, it is not muktzah because it can be used for its original function, and so you can move it around, right, even if your intention right now is to throw it into the fire. As opposed to a broken kli, right, which once it's broken, it becomes nolad, and if it's nolad, then it's muktzah on yantif, and you can't move it around. So that seems to be the rationale over here. The Gemara just wants to know, when did these kelim get broken? So let's take a look. The Gemara says, Amas, the Nishbaru Amas. And when did these kelim, you know, get broken? Ilema, if you'll say, the Nishbaru me'erev yantif, that they broke already on Erev Yontif. So then what's the question? Eitzim ba'almaninu. In other words, that once the spoon breaks, and in those days, again, it was a recycling culture, you never would dispose of anything that could be reused. So you have this broken wooden spoon, which as soon as it breaks, Right? Already the gears in your mind are turning. Right? What am I going to use this for now? Oh, I'll use it as firewood. I'll use it as fuel. So if this spoon broke on Erev Yom Tov, then right away, right, everybody knows that now this spoon is planned, it's prepared, right, to use as firewood. And so you should be allowed to feed the fire with spoons that broke on Erev Yom Tov. So the only possibility is that we're talking about, and again, Ilema Dimishbu, Erev Yom Tov Eitzim Ba'alman, Inu Ella, rather, right, Lav, aren't we talking about Yom Tov, that these spoons broke on Yom Tov? And nonetheless, right, it seems that there is such a thing as Nolad, even though during Bein HaShmashos of Yom Tov, the spoon was intact, and you planned everything perfectly, right? But somehow, once the spoon broke, it becomes Nolad, it becomes Muktzah. Right? The logic behind that is that you planned to use a spoon on Yom Tov. Right? That's what you planned to use. As long as these pieces still have the identity of a spoon, so then they are still the thing that you plan to use, and Yom Tov, you're just implementing your plan. But once the spoon transforms into something totally different, so that was not something that you planned to use on Yom Tov. You were not planning to use broken firewood spoon things. Right? That was not part of your plan, and so you can't go ahead and implement it because you never planned on it happening.
You know that usually when something breaks, you come with an empty fire, this is what you do. It's going to break, I know, it's like this, and you take your money, and we use something else.
Okay, so what you're getting into is called, I think, contingency planning, meaning I could have in mind, right, that as long as it remains intact, and I'm going to use it for you know,
intended purpose.
For exactly whatever the intended purpose of a spoon is, right, for... I don't have to say it for stirring, okay? And, but if it breaks, then I intend to use it for something else. So there definitely is such a concept. It's called Yoshevu Mitzafe, that if you're sort of waiting for that spoon to break, you're just waiting eagerly for the spoon to break so that you can use it to feed the fire. And so then even though it's intact on Erev Yom Tov, but we say, yes, you have this plan that you're going to use the broken pieces of the spoon. You're going to use it for firewood. And so you definitely could have that such a situation. It's a weak spoon. You anticipate that it's going to break, you know, because you're planning to stir something that's very stringy and hard, right? Or, it's a weak spoon and you've given it to your kids and so you know it's only a matter of time until one of them, you know, tries to see what happens if you bend it farther than it can bend. And that would be a case of Yoshevu Mitzafe where it is considered to be that they plan to use the broken shards of the spoon even though it wasn't broken during the Hashmashos. However, in a case where a person actually would prefer that the spoon remain intact, and expects that the spoon will remain intact, so it's a little bit harder to say with the straight face that he's really Yoshevu Mitzafe, that he's anticipating, he's planning that on using the spoon to feed the fire. So that's going to be the difficulty with saying that he planned on the spoon getting broken. So usually we'll say that absent this Yoshevu Mitzafe, then even by Yoshevu Mitzafe might not overcome Nolad anyhow. But I don't think that would work in this case because. Well, every Misa is really a Leda. Rabbi Arya Kaplan points out, he says, you know, people very often are frightened, right, by, the great, beyond what happens beyond, death. It's totally different from this world. So he says, imagine if you go to a fetus. And you tell the fetus, and you tell the fetus after a couple of months, you know what's going to happen? The umbilical cord, right, which delivers all of your nutrients and all of your oxygen, is going to be cut off. You're not going to get anything through that umbilical cord anymore. It's the end of the world. And imagine if you tell the fetus, you know, that you're swimming right now, right, inside of water, the fetal fluid. And in a couple of months, right, you're going to have to leave, right, this watery cocoon. How am I going to survive? Right, but we call that birth, and we know that beyond the fetus, there's this wonderful life that we're all living. But if you told that to a fetus, it would go crazy. It would seem like the end of the world, like the end of everything that's sustaining, the end of everything that's comfortable, the end of everything that's familiar.
Hasidim call it Yom Gelula.
Yom Gelula.
But that's not true, really.
Let him finish it, please.
Better than you not be born than born.
That's a Gemara in Erevin, whatever it means. No, but I think again that there is this idea, right? That it's an important point that the lashon of Chazal, right, is that when something dies, it's also it's a leida. It's a very beautiful hashtag point that emerges just from the nomenclature of Hilchos Moksa. So Yashikoa. So again, it's gonna be this issue of Nolad here. If it breaks on Erev Yontif, there's no issue of Nolad, because from the moment it broke, it already obtained its new identity. Right? And once it got the new identity, so then that lasts through Erev Yontif. So it must be that this halacha of Ein Masikin, the Shivrei Kalim, that you're not allowed to use a broken spoon to feed the fire, is talking about a spoon that broke on Yontif. And we don't say Muchan, Agav, Ovid, right, that because during Bein HaShmashos, this was something which was now Muktza, that it remains now Muktza throughout Yontif. Rather, we say the spoon was now Muktza during Bein HaShmashos. But the splinters didn't exist during Bein HaShmashos. There was no plan for the splinters during Bein HaShmashos. And therefore, if there is no plan for the splinters, there can be no implementation, right, of the splinters. There's nothing to implement. And so it must be Elo Lav B'Yontif. It must be that this spoon broke on Yontif, the Katani, and yet the Mishnah taught Masikin Bekalin, the Ain Masikin the Shivrei Kalin, that there is somebody, right, Rabbi Yehuda, at the very minimum, and he says that you cannot use the splinters of the spoon for firewood. Ella, so now we're done with the rejected interpretation, and we're ready for the first accepted interpretation. Rather, he itmar hachi itmar. If we have anything, this is what we have. Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel. Machlokes shenishbaru b'Shabbos. The only time there's a machlokes is when these cups or spoons broke on Shabbos. The marisavar, because the chachamim hold muchanu. It is prepared. It's planned out because it still has something that resembles its original identity. Well, marisavar, but Rabbi Yehuda holds noladu. It's nolad. Aval may erev Shabbos, but if it broke on erev Shabbos. Divrei Akol Mutarin, everybody agrees that you can move it for anything. Hoel v'huchanu l'malacha mibeod yom, like because it obtained its new identity from Erev Shabbos, it had a new identity during Bein HaShmashos. You are planning to use it for its new purpose during Bein HaShmashos, and therefore it's totally na muktza, even according to Rabbi Yehuda. So this is the first explanation where the Tanakhama says, Muchanhu, what does the word muchan mean? Prepared, it means prepared. The Tanakhama says it's muchan, and Rabbi Yehuda says nolad. Right, so in other words, right, it seems to be like almost from one side to the other, Rabbi Yehuda says it's nolad. The Tanakhama says it's not nolad, it's the opposite of nolad. It's muchan, not a half nolad, not nolad she'in or gamur. The Gemara seems to attribute to the Tanakhama the position that it's muchan. Has. Right? This is not nolad at all. It's something which is considered totally prepared. However, the next line of the Gemara is going to give us the opposite impression. The next line says, Tani Chada, one braisa taught, Masikin b'kelim, v'ein masikin b'shivrei kelim. You can use the spoon when it's intact on Yontif to feed the fire, but not the splinters of the spoon. V'tanya idach, another braisa taught, Kishen shemasikin bekelim, just like you can feed the fire with an intact spoon, kach masikin b'shivrei kelim, you can also feed the fire with the splinters of a spoon. And then finally, v'tanya idach, a third braisa taught, ein masikin lo bekelim, below b'shivrei kelim, you cannot feed the fire with an intact spoon, nor can you feed it with the splinters of a spoon. And the Gemara says three different halachos, it's a stira, both on the intact spoon and on the splinters, so the answer must be it's a machlokas. Right? Ha Reb Yehuda, one brice is Reb Yehuda, ha Reb Shimon, a second brice is Reb Shimon, and ha Reb Nechemia, the third brice is Reb Nechemia. So let's just sort out which brice is which. So of course we know Reb Nechemia from the previous Mishnah, he said you can only use a kli for the purpose it was created for. So in other words, the spoon was created for the purpose of stirring, and therefore, according to Rabbi Nechemya, you can only move the spoon for the purpose of stirring. You cannot move the spoon for the purpose of kindling. And certainly the fragments of the spoon can't move, right, for that purpose. They weren't created for any purpose, and so they're muktzah on Shabbos. That would explain the braisa that says, Ein masikin lo bekelim, velo beshirbei kelim. You can't use the spoon, whether it's intact, whether it's broken, because things can only be moved for the purpose that they were created for. That's Rabbi Nechemya. What's Rabbi Yehuda? What's Rabbi Shimon? In general, Rabbi Yehuda is more strict about Hilchos Muktzah than Rabbi Shimon is. And so let's say that the Braisa, which says that you're not allowed to use Shivri Kalim, Masikim Mekalim, Ein Masikim Shivri Kalim. And the second one says Masikim Mekalim and Shivri Kalim. So the Machlokas is the Shivri Kalim. So the Braisa that says that you can't use these Shivri Kalim is going to be Rabbi Yehuda. And the Braisa that says that you could use the Shivri Kalim is going to be Rabbi Shimon. Now, so there's a machlokas, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, about something which can't be used for its original purpose. The broken spoon can't be used for stirring, but could be used, does have some other utility as firewood. See, machlokas is in our Mishnah, the Chachamim versus Rabbi Yehuda, right? And now we discover, right, that it's in machlokas Rabbi Shimon, right, versus Rabbi Yehuda. It seems to be the same exact machlokas. So the question that the Magen Avraham says is, why do we need to invoke Rabbi Shimon here? Right? Rabbi Shimon says, right, that there are certain things that ought to be muktzah, right, but are not muktzah. And that's the basic pattern of Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Yehuda says this thing ought to be muktzah and it is muktzah. Rabbi Shimon says it ought to be muktzah, and but it's not muktzah.
It seems strange.
Not everything. Something.
Yeah.
Hmm? What's strange about it?
Well, you just mentioned that seems strange.
What
should be, but isn't.
Okay, so taking a step back, Rav Shapter explained this one time in the name of the Rav. And he said, the basic idea, right, behind all of Muktzah is that I need to plan before Shabbos starts that I'm going to do something with this object on Shabbos. And so you can talk, let's say, about a rock that I plan on Erev Shabbos to use as a doorstop. I can talk about a fishnet that I plan on Erev Shabbos to use as a chair cushion, and so on and so forth. And that's the idea behind Muktzah, that I need to plan to use it from before Shabbos starts. However, there are certain things that subconsciously we as a community plan to use them on Shabbos. Meaning we don't go through the inventory of our homes and every single Erev Shabbos affirm, check off, yes, I am planning to use my spoons for stirring, I am planning to use my forks for eating, I am planning to use my sarm for learning, and I plan to use my window shades for covering the window, and I plan to use my pillows for sleeping, and I plan to use my dresser drawers, right, for storing things and for cleaning things, and I plan to use my cufflinks, right, for fastening my shirt. We don't go through an inventory of every single thing in our house on Erev Shabbos, but what we do is we rely on a sort of unspoken societal convention that there are certain things that we're going to use when Shabbos comes without thinking about them. So the question is, how far does that extend? Does that only extend to the things that most people use most of the time? So if you took a poll of 100 people on the street, 99 of them would say, yeah, of course, I'm planning to use it on Shabbos, even though I don't think about it consciously, but I'm planning to use it on Shabbos. Or do we say that maybe even if only 80% of the respondents, or 70% of the respondents, would say, yeah, I guess that I plan to use that on Shabbos, that alone would already be sufficient. So that's the basic machlokas. In this realm of the unspoken, right, and unconsciously thought of things that we plan to use on Shabbos, and maybe there's gray areas, and Rabbi Yehuda will say, if it's a gray area, treat it like muktzah. The only things that are not muktzah are things that everybody would say, of course I plan to use that on Shabbos. Rabbi Shimon says, as long as you have a majority of respondents, as long as you have reasonably good argument that people might anticipate using it on Shabbos, that also is considered to be non-muktzah. That also is considered to be something that we subconsciously plan to use on Shabbos, even if not everybody has that plan. And so that's the machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. And again, similar to what Mr. Berkowitz said, right, why don't we say that that he's planning, contingent, right, on the spoon breaking, he's planning to use the splinters for firewood. So the Gemara right now is suggesting that you're right. According to Rabbi Shimon, that's exactly the reason that you're allowed to use it, right? Because you have this subconscious contingency plan that if the spoon breaks, you're going to use the splinters for firewood. If it breaks into pieces that are so small that you can't even use it for firewood, it's nola. You don't have a plan on that. But people do have in the back of their mind, they know that if the spoon breaks, they're going to recycle it as firewood. That's why Rabbi Shimon says that it's okay. Rabbi Yehuda says, I'm not so sure about that. Everybody has this subconscious plan. Some people are more recycling, conscious, environmentally conscious, financially conscious, whatever it might be. But other people are less so. And therefore, you don't have this unspoken, consensus among society. There's going to be, breakdown. Some people yes, and some people no. And as a result, nobody can say, I subconsciously was planning to use these splinters. So that's going to seem to be the machlokas, Rabbi Shimon versus Rabbi Yehuda. 60% of people do have this subconscious contingency plan. 40% of people don't have the subconscious contingency plan. Rabbi Shimon says 60% is enough. Rabbi Yehuda says that it's not enough. Rabbi Shimon, whom we passed him like, will say the majority wins, exactly. So basically what the Magen Avraham argues is that this Gemara doesn't say, it's not nolad at all. Right? It says, Rabbi Shimon, it says that this is something where even though it's like a half nolad, right, but there is still this contingency plan, subconscious contingency plan, and so we can sort of be lenient on that basis, on those grounds. And as a result of that, he says, it's not muhan. It's not muhan in the classical sense, at any rate. It's muhan in some sort of a lesser and diminished way. And even though on Shabbos, Rabbi Shimon says that this lesser and diminished hachana doesn't take away from the fact that you're allowed to move it, but on Yom Tov, right, the fact that the hachana is diminished does make it something which is mukta. No. Okay. We pass him like Rabbi Yehuda on Yom Tov. And again, so the idea here is, Rabbi Yehuda says that shulchan kelim can't be used for firewood. So, and we pass him like Rabbi Yehuda on Yom Tov. So we would also have to agree that shulchan kelim can't be used for firewood. And that's again where the Magen Avraham gets from. We pass him like Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says you can't use it. Therefore, we pass him that.
Can you use the cover or whatever the other things that you can't do with that?
If it was originally meant for covering, and now you're using it for covering, so then it's osa me'ein melacho. It's for sure mukhan, even according to Rabbi Yehuda. The only issue is that it can't do its original function. So there, Rabbi Yehuda says it's a problem. Again, we pass it like Rabbi Yehuda Yom Tov says in Magen Avraham. And Rabbi Yehuda says, ein masik in b'shirvei kelim, which means that on Yom Tov, you should not be allowed to move these shirvei kelim unless they're suitable for their original function. On Yom Tov? So the answer is, according to the Magen Avraham, it is mukhtas on Yom Tov, right? Because he says, Rabbi Yehuda says, it's not osa me'ein melacho. According to the Taz, it's mukhtar because it's still suitable for something. So we pass on Yom Tov, we pass him like Rabbi Yehuda. On Shabbos, halacha is like Rabbi Shimon. On Yom Tov, right, there's a special zera that people shouldn't be mezalot on Yom Tov, so we pass him like Rabbi Yehuda. Did you get all the questions here? What words does it use to explain the Tanakama? The first explanation, words were two words. Wuhan, who, right? It's not nolad at all. It's totally prepared. What words does it use to explain the second way? Rabbi Shimon. Tanakama is the following Rabbi Shimon, and he says that we rely on this unspoken societal subconscious consensus. In a situation where the first explanation was real leniency, second explanation was real stringency, that's Yom Tov. Why would the second explanation be real strictly? Because on Yom Tov, we're mapping up Rabbi Yehuda, that people should respect Yom Tov properly. First explanation was real leniency, because according to the first explanation, it's just not nolad at all, and perhaps even Yehuda would agree, perhaps, but it's not Nola. If he didn't have the Brisa, Yehuda would agree. Okay, so I broke my rule for the next sodya, and I'm going to digress for a moment, not to talk about Muktzah and to talk instead about Nechila Sadaim, but Nechila Sadaim actually is somewhat important for understanding the halakos of Muktzah. A few weeks ago, so I was traveling with my family to a family simcha in Sharon, Massachusetts, and we got stuck in traffic and we got lost and the trip took a lot longer than we were expecting, and we ended up, instead of lunchtime being in Sharon, Massachusetts, we were somewhere on the I-95 at lunchtime, and not Sharon, Massachusetts was nowhere in sight, it was still a couple of hours away. And so we decided that we were going to stop off at a Stop and Shop and get ourselves something to eat for lunch. And what they had in the Stop and Shop there, they had some kosher lox from Brooklyn and some kosher bagels that were commercially manufactured. And the question was whether I should buy myself 100 plastic cups in order to do Nechilas Yadayim, right, or not. So obviously the ideal is to buy the plastic cups or to bring plastic cups from home to do Nechilas Yadayim. But the family was very, very hungry, and we got bagels and we got the lox, and we didn't have cups with us. And I told my kids that they should wash from the water fountain. In other words, that they should press the water fountain for 2 seconds and put their hand underneath it, unpress it, right? Press it again for 2 seconds, put their hand underneath it. It's not such a good solution. I'll explain why in a second. Koach Avra, that works. You press the button, right, for the first 2 seconds, right? After you press the button, it still is Koach Avra. And if you let it go for 10 seconds, the last 8 seconds are not Koach Avra. But it's the same thing with the faucet. You take the handle, right, do it 2 seconds, count, turn it off again. As long as you're within the first 2 seconds, you for sure, that's considered to be Koach Avra.
By 2 seconds, you're talking about the amount of water that could be held by in the pipe in between the...
No, I'm talking about to what extent is the exit of the water from the pipe attributable to your action?
Yes, so what makes it
to what extent
seconds?
Is it water pressure?
Two
to what extent is it, is it gravity? So the first 2 seconds, it's hard to know the exact number. I don't know whether posts can actually give numbers. You can say 3 seconds, 4 seconds might already be a little bit much. But the basic idea is that the Gemara in the Chulin says, Koach Rishon. Right, that the first, the first push, right, the first, energy, right. So then, the ATPs, that you burn when you turn the handle, right, those are still considered to be the primary contributor to this flow of water. But after that point, right, so those ATPs are already, burnt up, and now it's just, water pressure, or gravity.
Actually, it's from the beginning, it's the water. Yeah. All you're doing is you're taking away the blockage. Turning the gate. And it doesn't conflict with the water.
There's constant pressure on the water.
You're right, so as opposed to having it, pump like that would be called out. But this way it's 2 seconds.
But the water
would come, anything that would remove the gate.
Constant pressure on the water.
Right, so this is two steps removed. I don't want to get so much into Maisa and Grama right now. Right, obviously you can spend the whole year, right, as Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach did, studying the details of Maisa and Grama. And I don't want to get into that now. The Psak Halacha is that for the first 2 seconds after you turn the handle, it is considered to be Koach Gavra. Again, the definition of Maisa and Grama is not necessarily that you're doing it primarily or someone else is doing it primarily, but rather you did an action and then there's a result that's happening. As long as that result is proximate in time to your action, or is sufficiently proximate to your action, then it's going to be considered to be a Maisa. The issue that I want to focus on is whether a faucet is considered a kli or whether a faucet is not considered a kli. You can figure out what the ramifications are for Hilchos Muktzah. Again, if the faucet breaks off, that is it a kli? Is it not a kli? That is a faucet that has not yet been installed. Let's say that you go to the Home Depot or to whatever plumbing hardware store you like to frequent, and you buy a faucet in a box. Right, is that something which is a kli and therefore could be moved on Shabbos? Or is it not EP and therefore cannot be moved on Shabbos? And if your kids get to it, then tough luck. It can't be moved. You know, Mihamal itself can't be moved with Sora Kufo or Mikolo because it's not a Kli. So that's what I want to talk about. And I think that there, in some ways, are parallels between the Tefillas Yadayim and Muktzah, although the parallels are not 100%. Let's talk for in the Tefillas Yadayim for a second. The issue is, you need to wash the Tefillas Yadayim from a Kli. That you need to wash the Tefillas Yadayim from a Kli that can hold at a certain volume of liquid. And so if you've got one of those curvy faucets, right, so then you know maybe it can hold that volume of liquid. If you have one of the flat faucets, then maybe it can't, but maybe the pipes are considered kelim also. And so the pipes plus the faucet could hold that amount of liquid. Or maybe there's like a water tank sometimes, right, that's on the roof or something, which also can hold a large volume of liquid. So let's assume for a second that we don't have the issue of volume, that the, whatever it is, the faucet, or the faucet plus the pipe, or the faucet plus the pipe plus the tank, is capable of holding that amount of liquid. And the only question is it a kli or is it not a kli? So the Ramah tells us that there's a basic rule for determining when things that are attached to the ground are considered to be kelim. And that rule is, if they were kelim before they were attached to the ground, then by putting them into the ground, you don't deprive them of their status as a kli. So let's say that you have some sort of a cup type of thing, right? That you theoretically like a mayim achronim type of thing, right? And then you attach it to the ground. So it was a kli before you attached it to the ground, and even now you can wash and tefillas yadayim from it. However, let's say that you just take a chunk of metal or a chunk of stone and you put it into a wall, and then you chisel it out, you carve it out, and you make it into something capable of holding liquid. Since you only made it into a kli after it was attached to the ground, it doesn't become a kli. Based on that, you would think that a faucet should be fine, right? The faucet was a kli before you put it into the ground, and then you put it into the ground, that should not take away its status as a kli. That's the argument that some posts can make in favor of using the water fountain or a faucet, you know, b'shas hadachak. They say, look, it was a kli before you put it into the ground, and as long as it was a kli originally, putting it into the ground is not going to deprive it of its kli status. However, Shlomo Zalman Auerbach makes a very innovative argument. I think that this argument is going to be supported by the next line of Gemara that we're going to read. He says, if it was originally manufactured with the intention of attaching it to the ground, so it's not a kli. It's not considered to be finished. It's not considered to be completed until it's attached to the ground. And once it's attached to the ground and it's completed, it can no longer be a kli. And so it's almost like a circle. As long as it's not attached to the ground, it has not yet been completed. It's not a kli because it's incomplete. Once it is attached to the ground, it is complete, but it can't be a kli because it's attached to the ground. And therefore, Shlomo Zalman Auerbach says, the pipes, right, they're not complete until they're attached to the ground. The water tower is not complete until you attach it to the pipes. The faucet is not complete until you attach it, right, also, until you whatever you call it, when you make it go firmly on top of the sink. Right? And therefore, he says, before you attach it, it's not a kli because it's incomplete. After you attach it, it's not a kli because it's attached to the ground. So the next line of Gemara, I think, is going to support this idea. Yes.
When you say that it, according to Rome, it's not a kli, does that mean you can't use it 2 seconds?
Right. I mean, Tefillas Yadayim must be from a kli.
Oh.
And if the faucet is not a kli, if the water fountain is not a kli, then you can't use it for Tefillas Yadayim. So that's why, you know, it's not so simple. You know, it's a cool kula, right? But it there's
a better off filling up a water bottle in the floor.
For sure. Yeah.
So I don't know. Like originally trees are being used. Now that doesn't matter.
You put a cup into the steam and then
you but you're not controlling the water, you can't use a 2 second rule because you're not controlling the flow of the water.
Once you put it in a cup,
once
so you're in control.
The water fountain
What if they out in
had a cup?
Without the cup. If you're fitting the cup, it's perfectly aligned. You could fit up anywhere.
No, there's a problem with the cup also. Let's say that you have a very, very big cup. And you tilt it on its side. And then the water starts coming out. So, and you just leave it there on its side, and the water keeps on coming out. You can't use that cup after the first couple of seconds.
Right,
because now the water is coming out just because of gravity. Even with the cup, you need to pour and then unpour, pour and then unpour.
Well, you do it three or four times
you can. Three or four times is also a different reason. But that's maybe why the Teosedion cups are small, right? So that you don't end up by accident just leaving it like this and then washing and washing, because that would be a problem.
What is it?
What is it?
Part of the ground.
Even before. So let's take a look at the next line. It's very, very short. Amar Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman says, Hani livni, levenin, bricks, the ishtayor mi binyana, that are left over from a construction project, shari l'taltu l'nu, you're allowed to move them around on Shabbos, the chazu l'mizga alayu, because you can use them to sit on. As opposed to nowadays, say, back then you used to sit on cinder blocks, and nowadays people don't usually sit on cinder blocks, although I know that I use the cinder blocks to hold down, right, my schlack and various other things like that, right, but for the most part, you know, this might not apply nowadays, but in the olden days, they used to sit on these cinder blocks very, very often, and therefore, once the construction project is over, and you know that you won't need them to put with cement and build walls out of, so you're allowed to move them around for whatever you want, because they basically become makeshift chairs. However, Sharginu, once he stacked them, right, perhaps to use in the next construction project, Vadai Aktsinu, certainly they become Muktza once again. So this is the Gemara, that once the construction project is over, all the loose bricks become Mukhan, you're allowed to move them around because they are, they're makeshift chairs basically, but once you plan to reuse them in a new construction project, or by the same token, right, the bricks, as soon as they're delivered, right, for this construction project, they are mukta. So the question is, why are bricks mukta? Aren't bricks tailored? They're usable, they're reusable, they are processed, right, they seem to meet all of the criteria that a key needs to meet. So why is...
No, that's keyboard. To contain anything. It's solid, that's why the brick.
Okay, so let's say they're not meant to contain, for Hilchus Mukza.
No interior cavity to
space. For Hilchus Mukza, a popsicle stick or a challah board doesn't have interior spaces either, so it's considered to be a kli pasha, but it's still a challah board is a kli. You're allowed to move it for Hilchus Mukza.
It's a chair.
It's not suitable to hold anything.
How much water could a challah board hold?
That's not the attribute of.
And so for Hilchus Mukza, usable, reusable process, right? It's going to be considered a kli.
It doesn't have to be holdable.
Even if it's not the receptacle, that the Gemara seemed to say earlier, that if you have a cane, right, so that's considered a kli for Hilchus Mukza, even if that it's not really capable of holding any liquid. So over here, these bricks, even though they're flat, right, but they are kalim, as long as you can use them as makeshift chairs. But as soon as you've designated them to be built into a building, they lose their status of kalim. So the Mishnah Brura says that the reason is because anything that is destined to become attached to the ground, anything which is manufactured with the intention of attaching it to the ground, and which you're planning to attach it to the ground, is not a kli. So he says, because kelim are things that are detached. As part of the definition, the kli must be detached from the ground, and as long as this its destiny is to be attached to the ground, it's not going to be a kli. And therefore, again, these bricks, as soon as you plan, right, to attach them with cement to the ground, they lose their status of kelim once again, says the Mishnah Brura. So I think that by that token, right, the sink, right, that you get from whatever your hardware store is, right, or a doorknob, right, that fell off and that you are planning to reattach, you know, to the door, right, or a drawer or a cabinet, you know, a door that comes off or anything along those lines, these things are not kalim, right, because you're planning to attach them to the ground. And as soon as you plan to attach it to the ground, just like these bricks, it loses the status of a kli. I think that's where Shlomo Zalman maybe was relying on when he said that the faucet, it wasn't a kli that later on became attached to the ground. Since it was manufactured with the intention of attaching it to the ground, it right away, it doesn't become a kli to begin with. The bricks can turn on and off, right? The bricks could be makeshift chairs, right, as long as the construction project is over. Right, but then once you designate them for a new construction project, they become ice clean again. So I think that, you know, there is this idea. You can have it, let's say, I know that there's portable sinks, right, that sometimes they use, you know, for simchas, if they're having a simcha at a hall, which is not meant for having so many people, they can bring in these portable sinks, right, which I guess you put a hose right up into the faucet. So that's a type of faucet which is not meant to be attached to the ground. But if you buy something from the Home Depot, you say, you know something, I'm going to use this for my portable sink business. I'll rent it out, you know, to people who need extra sinks at their simchas, right? So then it becomes a kli. And as soon as you intend, you change its designation, you change its destiny, so it does become a kli. But the moment you say, you know something, shargino, I'm going to use this now, right, for a sink which is attached to a counter, which is attached, you know, to the wall, which is attached to the ground, once you do that, it stops being a kli again. So it all really depends on what your plans are. So right now, I don't think that our... That the plan is for us to be attached to the ground. The plan is we should go on. The Shia should come at the Gila Amaves, you know, the Netzach. And,
concrete in your shoes, the Matthews.
Yes.
But they don't want to be attached to the ground. They want to be attached to the water.
Yeah, so, okay, Mr. Shem, we'll pick up from here tomorrow. Have a wonderful day.
Good. Yeah.